Hey, this is Kyle Eidelman from Southeast Christian Church, and I want to thank you for listening to the message today. As we open up the scriptures together, I pray that this message inspires you, challenges you, and is the right word at just the right time in your life. Enjoy the message.
So listen, if you're feeling like your life doesn't have a lot of direction right now, if you're feeling like there's a lack of purpose, you're not really sure about this year or next year or 3 years from now, you're not fully content, you don't know why, I would just really encourage you to think about what we're talking through in this series, One at a Time Living, where you take the focus off yourself and you begin to think about, okay, who are the people that God is putting in my path each day that he wants me to influence and impact? Like, this is why you're here. If you're a Christian, the reason why God didn't just save you and then take you to heaven is because he wants you to be on mission here. He has conversations, connections he wants you to make, people that he wants you to influence. As a church, it's our commitment to love people one at a time. I think when we do that together, the opportunity to change this world is right in front of us. You demonstrated this type of heart and this type of commitment at the end of last year. So before I really jump into my message, I just want to take a minute to celebrate with our church family. So if you're visiting this weekend, if you've just kind of been checking things out, this isn't so much for you. Glad you're here. You're welcome to listen in. But really for our church family, at the end of last year, we had this end of the year giving challenge called Empty the Jar. And we asked you to make some kind of a sacrificial gift that was over and beyond your regular giving, because God had given us some great opportunities in 2022 and we wanted to be ready for those. And I love the fact that we're a part of a debt-free church, so all the money that we give goes directly into ministry. And we told you about some of the opportunities in 2022, building an emergency house for women who've been trafficked, helping our Bullock County campus have a permanent church home, being a part of the long-term recovery efforts in Western Kentucky where the tornadoes struck. And then each of our campuses have different needs that they identified in their own communities. So here at the Blankenbaker campus, you know, we're building and revitalizing a playground at the Benet School for kids, students who have disabilities and special needs. At the Indiana campus, they're kickstarting a construction project on a residential house that supports young adults who are aging out of the foster care system. At the Etown campus, they're building a house for a family in need. At the Shelby campus, they're upgrading some soccer fields close to the church to help minister reach to the community. At the Beachmont campus, they're buying a 15-passenger van to pick up kids to take them to an aftercare program back and forth from aftercare program that we have with one of our ministry partners called the Hope Place. And I could just go on and on. Each campus has these different things that they've identified. And so we just asked our church family, hey, would you be prayerful about making an end of the year gift? Now, the experts in fundraising for nonprofits and such would tell you that this is not how you do it. Like, you need to set a goal, say this is how much we're going after. You need to tell certain people, this is how much we need from you. You need to have these conversations. Can you give this much? Can you give this much? And we just believed that what God wanted us to do in this situation was say, hey, here are some opportunities. We just want you to pray about it and see what happens. And we knew there'd be incredible power if the full force of the church came together to love people one at a time through generosity. And so the last couple of years, we've done a year-end offering, and we've usually had, like, each of those 2 years, we had like around $3.5 million, which is awesome. But we put a little more emphasis on it this past year. And so we were prayerfully planning about what we could do if there was a year-end offering of around $5 million. We didn't want to be presumptuous, but that's what we were planning for. I was secretly praying for $7 million, but I lacked the faith to tell anyone that out loud. So I wanted to believe that that was possible, but didn't say anything. Then I started to hear about stories of how people were giving, and I was just so encouraged by it. Like, I saw this offering envelope, and someone had given, I think it was $837, and they put on the offering envelope that they had canceled their Netflix and their YouTube live subscription and some other subscription, and that's how much they would have spent for the year, but they want to give that money, and I love that. Because that's a sacrifice. You're giving up something you really like for something that you love. And there was a family that had their vacation canceled twice because of COVID. And so they were taking the money that they had planned to put on that vacation, and they wanted to give that money to the church. And they said they were glad that their, and this is what they told me, this is what they told me, that they were glad their vacation got canceled so that they could be a part of that. And I thought, man, that's the kind of heart that God, it's the kind of heart that God honors. And then there was a college student who said he wanted to give the money he would usually spend on coffee for a month. And you're like, well, that's nice, but you know, it's probably not very much, like $200. Apparently it's a $6 to $7 a day coffee habit. And I started hearing stories like that. And I was just really encouraged by that. And so I am thrilled to tell you that we did not give $3 million. We didn't give $5 million. We didn't give $7 million. But as a church family, we came together and we gave over $10 million at the end of the year, which is unbelievable. And if you've been around here very long, then you know how that translates. You know what that means. You know the lives that'll be impacted and changed for it. If you haven't been around, I know it's easy to be cynical, but it really makes such a difference. And some people, I know some of you are listening to this and you're like, well, that's awesome because now there's plenty, right? And can I just tell you something? The truth is the needs are so great. And the opportunities are so many. That could have been $50 million. And the opportunities God gives us, I don't know if you think about it this way, but this is helpful to me, to understand that we say no to more than what we say yes to. Not because we want to, but because we are always moving, listen, at the speed of God's guidance and your generosity. We're always moving at the speed of God's guidance and your engagement, your service, being a part of the full force of the church. So I can't wait for what God's gonna show us in 2022. I know he's gonna match up some plans that he has for us with his provision through his church family. So thank you for being a part of that. You'll hear more in the weeks and months ahead. But really, it's all motivated by this Jesus way of changing the world, that we wanna love people one at a time. Like, this is how Jesus lived his life. He challenges his disciples with this approach in John 13. So this is the same chapter where they have what we would talk about as the Last Supper, and Jesus washes their feet. Okay, same chapter, same night in his life. And it's later, after all of that, where he is talking to them about how he wants them to be known. And here's what he says to his disciples in John 13, verse 34, 35. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, by loving people the way that I've loved you, everyone will know that you're my followers, my disciples, if you love one another. So Jesus is getting ready to send them out. It's a small group of followers, really, but they're gonna turn the world upside down. And Jesus wants them to not forget that the way they are to be known, what should drive their mission, is their love for others. Like, that should be what makes them so distinctive. And this is what changed the world through the early church, is the way that they loved people. Now, I know some of you, if you're like me, you sometimes think of yourself as a follower or a disciple, and you measure how you're growing in that based on things like knowledge. Well, I know more now than I used to know. And learning is part of being a disciple, but or maybe you think of theological understanding, or maybe you think of church involvement. You know, there's these things that are important, and they are ways to gauge growth, but how you love other people tells the most about your maturity as a follower of Jesus. It's how you love. You can know all kinds of things, but if you don't love people the way that Jesus loved people, then you're missing it. So Jesus says, it's a new command I give you. Well, what makes it new? Well, it's not new. Like, they've heard this. Love others is something that was talked about quite often. So why is it new? Jesus says what's new is that you're to love the way that I love you. This is how the world will know you're mine. Like, he doesn't say, hey guys, this is after the Last Supper, I got something for you. I'm just gonna pass these out. I made some bracelets. And kind of pretty creative, really. They just say WWJD on it. I just want you to go out. I want you to wear these bracelets. We're gonna do a campaign around it. And I want you to hand out as many of these bracelets as possible. And by this, the world will know that you're my followers because you wear these bracelets. Nothing wrong with wearing those bracelets. That's not what Jesus said would change the world. Jesus didn't say to them, hey guys, so here's the plan. The world will know you're my followers by your strict interpretation of every word I've ever said. So here's what I want you to do. I want you guys to separate into different groups. We'll call each of them a denomination. And you can argue and fight back and forth with one another and argue anything into significance. Whatever you do, don't focus on what's most important. Get down to the granular. Make a big deal out of little things like your opinions and preferences. Make that what determines if someone gets to be a part of the church. And this is how the world will know you're my disciples. Like, that's not how that conversation went. He didn't say the world will know you're my disciples by your moral superiority and your self-righteous indignation. Like, the world will know you're my followers by the way you're angry and judgmental towards other people who aren't my followers. So if you could just look disappointed in people all the time, I think that'll win the world over. If you can just have a sigh of disgust that you perfect and you use it at work, when somebody went to a party, when someone's talking about something inappropriate, if you'll just and walk away, it'll get them every time. They'll just come running. Like, that's not how the conversation went. He doesn't say, look, the world will know you're my followers by your political preferences. By this, all men will know that you're my followers, by the politician that you back, by your yard signs. I will call all men unto me. Like, that's not how it went. It's love people one at a time. It's not, hey, by your social media posts, by your scrolling and trolling, I will call all men to myself. Like, that's not it. It's love the way that I have loved, and the way Jesus loved was one at a time. And the disciples knew that that was different. Like, the other rabbis, they didn't do things the way Jesus did. The disciples had a hard time figuring it out. That's why when they would be in crowds of people, the disciples thought that part of their job was to keep the people at a distance, to keep Jesus focused on the agenda for the day. You know, he's teaching right now, it's not a good time. Like, that's how they approached Jesus. While Jesus was constantly pushing pause on whatever the plans were and giving attention to one person at a time. Love people the way that Jesus says, I have loved you. And maybe the disciples weren't exactly sure what he meant. Like, what's he mean by that? And maybe as they're thinking about it, they look down and then they notice their freshly washed feet. Oh, that's what he means. Love people one at a time is how Jesus loved. It's how he lived. It's how he's called us to change the world. So, if there's a word that maybe doesn't usually get much attention that I think describes what made the ministry of Jesus so impactful, is the word proximity. Like, proximity is what ministry came from in his life. The people he happened to be around determined what he gave his attention to. So ministry flowed out of proximity. And so we see this from the beginning. When he comes to earth, we celebrate Christmas, we're celebrating the incarnation. What's the incarnation? God with us. It's a celebration of proximity, that Jesus didn't love us from a distance. He didn't just love us from far away. He loved us close up. He came and he dwelt among us. I love the way the Message paraphrases that, John chapter 1:14. The word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. That's proximity. It's proximity. Proximity lets you know that you're really cared for. Jesus did ministry that way. He did life that way. He loved people with whom he was in close proximity with. Sometimes that felt more like happenstance. They didn't really plan it. And other times it felt very intentional and scheduled. But nothing communicates that you care like just being there. So this week, I came into the office on Monday. It was MLK Day. Office was closed. I needed to get started on the sermon because that's still coming, and MLK understands. So I was in the office working on my sermon a little bit, and while I was by myself working on the message, I just felt like there was this burden, kind of something personal that I was struggling with and dealing with, and I knew I needed to share it with someone, but I didn't want to share it with someone. You ever have anything like that? Because, you know, it's humbling, and the proud part of me just wants to say, I got it. I know what the Bible says, that we should bear one another's burdens, Galatians 6:2. I know that that's what I'm supposed to do. I just don't like doing it. And so I felt like God wanted me to share it with someone. And around that time where I was kind of feeling that conviction, I get a text from a friend who says, hey, it's not somebody I hear from very often. Hey, just wanted to check on you. Hope you're doing good today. Let me know if I can pray for you, do something for you. I texted him back and I said, hey, I'd love to tell you I'm doing great, but I'm struggling with something and it would probably be good to share it with someone. I said, do you think you might have some time this week? Just kind of hoping that'd be the end of it. Like, okay, God, I mean, that's close enough, right? He texted me back and he said, what about now? I said, well, I'm at the office and by the time you got here, you're probably 30 minutes away. I'll just swing by your house this week. He texted me back, on my way. And he came up to the office and he listened and we talked and prayed. And there's something about just showing up that has tremendous power. I remember when my dad's mother passed away. The funeral was taking place in the town I grew up in, Joplin, Missouri. My parents lived in Evansville, Indiana, probably 7 hours away. So they had made the trip for my grandmother's funeral. I was there as well, of course. And right before the funeral started, I saw four or five guys walk in the back, stand in the back. And I recognized them. They were from my dad's church, part of his men's group in Evansville, Indiana. When the funeral was over, they turned around, left, got back in the car, drove back to Evansville. They knew he had responsibilities, family, cousins, you know, siblings. And so they just came and then they left. What's that say? That proximity where you look up and somebody is there at just the right time. There's incredible power in that. It took me a while to understand that and appreciate it as a pastor. I remember as a young pastor, while I was still in seminary, but serving at a church, that when someone went through something tragic, an unexpected loss of a loved one, I would go over to their home and just feel this anxiety because I wanted to say something to make things better. And I was 19, 20, 21 years old. I didn't know what to say. And I felt like I'm supposed to know. I'm supposed to know what to say to answer these deep questions and to put them at peace. And I never knew what to say. And then I remember listening to one of my professors in a pastoral care class say that in those moments, they don't remember what you say. They just remember that you showed up. I think he's right. There's something about proximity, about being close. If there's ever a time where we need to be reminded of that, I suppose this is the time because we've become more and more comfortable with isolation and doing life from a distance and more uncomfortable with people being too close to us and more aware when someone gets in our personal space. And yet there's something about us that we have been made to live life in close proximity with others. I was reading in Japan last year that they put a new government position in place. The Minister of Loneliness, which I think maybe something's lost in translation because that makes it sound like their job is to help people be more lonely. And it's not, like that's not the job. The job is to help people find better connection with one another because they have found just that suicide has become more and more of an issue. And in October of last year, they put this position in place because in October of last year, they had more people die of suicide in that 1 month than from COVID-19 in the past 12 months combined. And they said, we need each other and we're missing it. We got to figure out some creative ways to make sure we live in proximity. And we see all kinds of examples and research that would indicate that with the rise of social media, we actually feel more isolated than ever. Like proximity is actually more difficult. It's not easier. We struggle more with loneliness than we ever have before. It's had kind of the opposite effect that we might think. I was reading a New York Times article about a guy named Hal who had 700 friends on social media. I can't remember if it was Facebook or Instagram, but he had like 700 friends and he's pretty proud of that. And he thought, you know what would be really cool? He's kind of doing it for the story. He's a writer. It'd be really cool to get all 700 friends together. And so he put on social media an invitation that there was gonna be this party and they were gonna meet there after work, but he needed to know how many people were coming so they could attend or maybe attend or not attending. 15 people said they would be there. 60 said they might be there. He was hoping for 20. It's not a lot, but it's 3%, but 20. I mean, you got 20 friends. That's a lot of connection. He writes, and on the evening in question, I took a shower, I shaved, put on new pants and a favorite shirt. Brimming with optimism, I headed over to the neighborhood watering hole and waited and waited and waited, and eventually one person showed up. And the one woman who showed up to meet Hal, he didn't know her. She was a friend of a friend. They talked for a few moments. She left. He waited till midnight. No one else came. He ordered a beer and salt, and he concludes his article with these words, 700 friends, but I'm drinking alone. And that captures where a lot of people are at in our world. There's something that's tremendously powerful when those of you who are followers of Jesus decide that you're going to intentionally put yourself in proximity with someone who may not have anyone. When you intentionally show up for someone, even though it's inconvenient, and you don't know what to say, but the fact that you're there is what they'll remember. There's no substitute for this. I was reading earlier this year where Elon Musk, the world's richest human, I think his net worth is like $280 billion, he was selling all of his homes. You know, he had a number of homes. He was selling all of his homes. And he talked a bit about why, that the material possessions were kind of a distraction from what he really wanted to focus on. But then he did this interview where he talked a little bit more. And here's what he said. He said, being in a huge empty house when there are no footsteps echoing through the hallways, how do you make yourself happy in a situation like that? He said, when I was a child, there was one thing I said. I said, I never want to be alone. And then he whispered to himself, I never want to be alone. And so he lives, at least reported that he lives in this $50,000 prefab one-bedroom place where he can stay focused on his work. And here's someone who's worth $280 billion, but there's within him this awareness that if you're living alone, if you're missing out on proximity, that it's hard to find joy. And so if you look at Jesus, he seemed to know this. And sometimes it was someone who was wealthy, like Zacchaeus, where Jesus just knew, he needs to spend some time with me. Zacchaeus, I'm gonna go to your house today for lunch. And sometimes it was someone who was more of an outcast, like the woman at the well. Jesus sits down, has a conversation with her. But ministry flowed from proximity. And so I want us to look for a few minutes at a parable found in Luke 14. Let's look at this quickly, but it's a parable called the Great Banquet. And so for context, Jesus tells this story while he's having dinner at the house of one of these religious leaders. And so he looks around. I think there were probably quite a few people invited, but he looks around and he recognizes that everybody there is a part of a certain social club. They all have a certain status, religious status about them. Like, it's exclusive. And most of us are really drawn to anything that's exclusive. Like, if somebody's advertising membership, it's an exclusive. It's not for everyone. It's exclusive. Exclusive sees the world through this us and them category. And we always want to make sure we're in the us category. And Jesus looks around and he sees that this is how these religious leaders are doing things. Like it's us, but there's no them. And so he decides he's going to confront the situation. And he says in verse 12, I wish I could have been there. Then he turned to the host, the guy who's throwing the party. When you put on a luncheon or a banquet, and this isn't hypothetical, this is a luncheon, right? Like, this is what's happening. He said, don't invite your friends, brothers, relatives, and rich neighbors. Now, I wasn't there, but I think what's happening is if you had been there, you would have looked around and it would have been like, oh, look, there's his friends, his brothers, his relatives, and his rich neighbors. So he says to the guy who's throwing a party and invited all these people, when you throw a party, don't invite all these people. And it's awkward. And there's part of us that, I mean, that's how we try to structure our lives. We want to spend as much time as possible with people who look like us and talk like us and live like us and believe what we believe, and people who are comfortable with us and we're comfortable with them, people who can do for us so we're not just doing for them. And Jesus says very directly, don't do that, for they will invite you back and that will be your only reward. Now here's what Jesus is doing. Really interesting. He is connecting your reward in heaven with the people you spend time with here on earth. I'm not making that connection. He's making that connection. He's saying that. He's connecting your reward in heaven with the people you love here on earth. And so it gets really awkward in that moment. Jesus says instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. Then at the resurrection of the righteous in heaven, God will reward you for inviting those who could not repay you. Hey, bro, you need to invite a bunch of people who are not here. Stop inviting all these people. Invite some people who don't usually get invited. And it's just tense, but there's this guy who's at that table, and he's one of these people who doesn't like conflict. You have somebody like this in your life? Like, there's some people who like conflict. You're like, get some popcorn, this is gonna be good. There's other people who, when conflict arises, they just feel the need to immediately make everything okay. That's this guy, verse 15. Hearing this, a man sitting at the table with Jesus exclaimed, what a blessing it will be to attend a banquet in the kingdom of God. Let's talk about this instead. And Jesus decides, let's keep going. I'm gonna push in a little bit more. And so Jesus tells a story, gives this parable. A man prepared a great feast and sent out many invitations. When the banquet was ready, he sent his servant to tell the guests, come, the banquet is ready, but they all began making excuses. So all these people who had expected to be invited got invited, but they start making excuses. One said, I've just bought a field and I must inspect it, please excuse me. Another said, I've just bought 5 pair of oxen and I wanna try them out, gotta take them for a test drive, please excuse me. Another said, I just got married. I can't come. My wife won't let me go. It's not my fault, it's her fault. So they each kind of give these excuses. Each of the excuses are not rude. They're not hostile, like they're polite. It's just not a good time right now. Every excuse is a priority excuse. Every excuse is, it's not that I don't want to, it's just that this is more important to me right now. I think that when it comes to responding to the invitation to do life in proximity with God and other people, it tends to be the same. Like, we may not talk about the 5 oxen, but it's a priority thing. And Jesus, in verse 21, continues with this story. The servant returned and told his master what they had said, and his master was furious and said, go quickly into the streets and alleys of the town. Go to these places you don't usually go and invite some people that you don't usually invite. Invite the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. This isn't gonna be exclusive. This is gonna be inclusive. Go everywhere and invite everyone. This is the one at a time approach to proximity. A couple things I would just draw your attention to is that if we're gonna live this one at a time way, living in proximity means being fully present. It means being fully present, that you're gonna be engaged where you are. The disciples struggled with this, like they could have a hard time seeing opportunities in front of them because they were focused on all these other demands and pressures. And that's something I struggle with. My wife will sometimes say to me, sometimes sweetly, not always, but sometimes she'll say, I feel like you're here, but you're not present. Or something like that. She was in the last service, so it's fine. And she's right. Like, I don't do it on purpose, but I just have this within me where I'm always thinking about something. I'm distracted with something that needs my attention over here. And so I'm around people that I love and love me. I'm around people where I have opportunities to encourage them and influence them and impact them, but I'm not really present. I'm not really there listening. I'm not really engaged. I'm not thinking, what would it be like to be them today? I'm not putting myself in their shoes or thinking about the context of their life and what's happening in their situation where I might be able to encourage them, point them to Jesus a little bit. I'm kind of in my own world, distracted. And Jesus just had a way of being fully present. So proximity means being fully present. Today, you're gonna have a chance to do that. There's gonna be someone in your life that needs you to be fully present. And when you show up that way, you're showing up like Jesus. It's how he lived. It's how he loved. The second thing I would say that we see in this is that proximity means loving uninvited and overlooked people. This is tough because it means caring for, reaching out to people that you might normally do your best to avoid. And some of us live very careful lives to make sure we're never around anyone like this. Anyone that might drain us, anyone that we're always doing for them, but they never do for us. We avoid places like this. We do our best to just keep those walls in place. Jesus talks about poor people here, and he's speaking in financial terms, but the word is interesting because it's literally translated as people without value. Invite those people. And so who is this for you? Maybe it's someone at work that you just quickly walk past. Maybe it's someone at school, usually sits by themselves at lunch. And you avoid eye contact with them, worried about what it might do to your reputation. Maybe it's someone in your neighborhood that you just think it's probably better to not have a conversation with. Maybe it's a relative who's just always needing something and it seems like they just always are going out of their way to make a mess out of things. And there's something powerful when we show up in proximity with people who can do nothing for us in return. You might not get anything for that here, but there is a reward one day when you love the way that Jesus loved. Beth Moore tells a story of being at the airport, and she was at her gate, kind of getting settled, and there was an elderly man who was in a wheelchair, and he looked kind of dirty, unkempt. His hair was long and kind of matted, and she just had this instinct within her to kind of give him some space, just distance herself from him. And she was preparing for her next talk, next speaking engagement, and she just felt this impression from God that she was supposed to go talk to him. And she's like, oh, this isn't a good time. And she thought maybe she was supposed to go witness to him, but then she had this impression from God that she was supposed to go brush his hair. And she says, that seems really weird to you. It seems really weird to me. That's never been something I've felt the Holy Spirit ask me to do before or since. But in that moment, there it was. And she quickly dismissed it. I mean, she didn't even have a hairbrush, and yet she couldn't escape it. And so she went over to him and she said as quietly as she could, didn't want to draw much attention, sir, may I have the pleasure of brushing your hair? And this elderly man said, what did you say? And she said, may I have the pleasure of brushing your hair? And he said, little lady, if you expect me to hear you, you're gonna have to talk louder than that. And everybody's looking. Sir, may I have the pleasure of brushing your hair? And he's kind of caught off guard by the question, but said, if you really want to. And she didn't really want to. But she said, I'd be glad to. I just don't have a hairbrush. He said, I have one in my bag. And so she got on her hands and knees behind his wheelchair and she unzipped the stranger's bag and she found the hairbrush and she started brushing his hair. She says, as she tells the story, there's not a lot of things that I do well, but I've raised two girls and I know a lot about brushing out tangled hair. And she said, I know this sounds strange, but I never have felt that kind of love for someone I didn't know in my entire life. Do you know what that's like? I think if you're a Christ follower, you know exactly what she's talking about. Where God just decides to put someone in your path and you love them and care about them and you don't really know why. She brushed out his hair until it was nice and smooth and she thought, okay, this is the part where I need to talk to him about Jesus. I mean, surely this is where it's all going. And so she said, sir, do you know my Jesus? And he said, yes, I do. She was surprised by that. Like she thought the purpose was gonna be to introduce him to Jesus. But the man said, I've known Jesus ever since I married my bride. She wouldn't let me get to know her until I got to know him. And this elderly man said, but the problem is, I haven't seen my bride in months. I had to have open heart surgery out of town and she's been too ill to come see me. I was sitting here thinking to myself, I'm gonna look like such a mess when I see my bride today. And immediately Beth knew, okay, this is what God wanted. And she was happy to help, but she still thought it was unusual because she thought that the idea was probably to help somebody meet Jesus. And a few minutes later, she was boarding the plane when the airline hostess approached her, with tears in her eyes, and said, I saw what you did for that man. Do you mind me asking, why did you do that? And she said, do you know my Jesus? And she explained, now this is the way that Jesus has loved me, so I know that I'm supposed to love other people that way. And Jesus says, by this, the world will know that you're my followers. By this. Our story in Luke 14 ends with the servant going out and giving invitations to people who had not been invited. But here's what happens next as we wrap this up. After the servant had done this, he reported, there's still room for more. Still room for more. I've invited all these people, but there's still room for more. His master said, go out into the country lanes and behind the hedges and urge anyone you find to come so that the house will be full. I want a full house. Go find anyone you can. And so living in proximity means loving uninvited and overlooked people, but it also means going to unfamiliar and uncomfortable places. This is my challenge for you this week, to mix it up, to mix up your proximity. You usually go over here for coffee, go somewhere else for coffee. You don't have to go to that place for the rest of, just for this week. If you usually go to this grocery store, go to a different grocery store. And as you go, I want you to pray this prayer. God, help me to find myself in proximity with somebody that needs to be seen, that needs to be loved, needs to be cared for. God, help me. Give me that opportunity. And when you go to unfamiliar and uncomfortable places, you'll probably be surprised at some of the one-at-a-time opportunities that begin to come up. I think if you don't do that, if you just kind of stay in your bubble and you just kind of come here and you sit at your office and you go home and you're around the same people, and it's harder to have those stories. But when you change up your proximity, it's amazing some of the one-at-a-time opportunities that begin to flow. Let's pray. So God, I thank you that you loved us this way, that you came near to us when we were far away, and you came to a really uncomfortable place, and you invited uninvited people. I thank you that that is our story. And now, God, you've given us a huge stack of invitations, and you're sending us out to love people one at a time, to invite people one at a time. And so I would ask, God, that even in this moment, you would put maybe the name, face of someone in the mind of your followers. You'd give them an opportunity to let that person know that they follow you by the way that they love. God, would you give us opportunities this week to just show up, to be in proximity with somebody who needs to see you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening. If today's message made you realize you need to take your next step with Jesus, we would love to help you with that. You can connect with us on any of our social media platforms throughout the week or visit our website at southeastchristian.org. And if you want to hear more content like this, you can check out our Sermons podcast or our One at a Time podcast. Both can be found everywhere podcasts are available. Have a great week.